All right, what's your number two?
My number two. Just for disclosure, you had talked about you try not to put multiple in your list. I put multiple all in one. So this is an entire series. I'm just saying.
I would do that too.
Yeah,
I have something explaining. That's similar to that, so go for it.
But I have an entire series here for this next one. And this is another one, if you know me, you kind of expected this to be on this list. But if you don't know me, if you're new to the channel or anything, maybe you love this. And if you do, I'm really hopeful that you love this. But I'm talking about the entire Xenosaga series here and how this should have been and still to this day should be beloved. I ask for it every E3 for an announcement of a Xenosaga collection, a Xenosaga HD collection, because this game is, and it's hard for me because I say this all the time, right? Easily top five. I really do feel Xenosaga, at least episode one, because again, for full disclosure, I never got to play or beat Xenosaga episode two or episode three. And if you go try to buy, I think it's episode two in particular, but both episode two or episode three, and you're going to be looking at spending $100 just to try to get your hands on this game. But Xenosaga was so good in my fondest memory, honestly, of this game. And it sounds weird that this is my fondest memory, but it truly is. Okay, it came out in 2002. So I was roughly around 10 years old at this time, or 2003. So I was 11 years old at this time, roughly. Somewhere in that time, that year, I lived in a small town with 1,500 people. There was the closest thing to like go do stuff you had to drive 30 minutes to. And so our family video rental store was in a town 30 minutes away. And so I didn't get to go regularly, but every now and then I'd get to go with my parents. We'd make a trip to this town to like buy groceries, and I'd be able to convince my parents, hey, let's stop by family video so I can see if there's a game I want to rent. And I remember walking through the aisles, and I'm going to hold on just one second.
He's digging through his collection trying to find something. I'm assuming it's Xenosaga.
It is Xenosaga. Okay. And I know for the listeners you can't see this, but I'm pulling this out more to show Pete. I was walking through the aisle of family video, and I'm sure you've been to a family video before. Of course, those that know, family video closed recently, but how the video game section was always centered, at least at the family videos I've always been, is it's kind of like in its own corner in this like circular enclosure, basically. I was walking around trying to figure out what game I want to play, and then I just see this cover, okay? And it's hard to see because of the lighting here. But basically, it says in big letters, Xenosaga Episode 1. And then there is a German writing underneath it. And I'm not even going to like...
Zermacht.
It's Der Wille Zermacht. Yeah. And then on the cover, you just see this girl with like blue hair. It has like this like... you know, like sci-fi type like gear stuff and angel wings coming off her back. And I was like, this looks really cool. So I picked it up, flipped it over, looked at the back, and I just read, thousands of years into the future, man exists only in deep space. Brutally opposed by a merciless alien race, humanity faces an uncertain destiny as it unlocks the secrets of the universe in search of the ultimate truth. Over 80 hours of gameplay, stunning graphics and 3D environments, 4 exhilarating minigames, innovative battle and control system. And I said, Mom, I want this game. I want to rent this game. And so we rented it for five days, and I was blown away. I loved everything about Xenosaga Episode 1. Finding out about Cosmos, which that is the name of the character on the front cover there, and her whole ordeal, and being an android, and all this things that goes on, this very epic space journey. It was so amazing. I loved every aspect of it again. I really wanted to play episode 2 and 3. I really wanted to play episode 2 and 3. But collectively, across all the titles, they did not sell well. And just to have it on here again, this is from the wiki page. Episode 1 managed a strong debut, selling 240,000 units in the first 3 days of its release, becoming the seventh best-selling game in Japan during 2002. It was also a commercial success internationally, going on to sell over 1 million copies. However, this is where things go bad. Episode 2 debuted at number 2 in the sales charts, going on to sell 280,000 in Japan, but it was also a commercial success, although no sales figures were revealed at the time in North America. Despite this, though, Episode 2 underperformed commercially, reaching just over 50% of Namco's projected target sales. Episode 1 and Episode 2 technically met with poor sales, with its debut being seen as disappointing for the still popular series. So this was a very popular series, but not seen as a good selling title. They went on to sell 38,000 units in 2006, and then Episode 3 debuted, and its sales only approached 124,000 units, debuting as the lowest for the trilogy. It only sold over 181,000 units in 2006 in Japan. It sold 343,000 units across Japan, with Asia and North America, by February 2027. And Takahashi, one of the developers or the creators of it, later said the whole series underperformed. And that's so sad to me, because this game is amazing. Yes, I know that if you go look up things, you're going to hear people talk about episode 2 and 3 didn't hit as much and didn't do as much as like episode 1 did. So some, you know, it kind of fell off. Episode 3 redeemed itself some, but of course episode 2 didn't sell very well, and it's an episodic, so a lot of people who either didn't like episode 2 or didn't pick up episode 2 weren't going to go pick up episode 3, so that's going to make things down further down. And on top of it, if you go and look at the history, this game was actually supposed to be 5 titles long, and Namco made them condense it down to 3. And that's kind of where some of the story, I think, goes off the rails. Cosmos appeared again. I talked about with Residents of Fate that the characters were in Project X Zone. Cosmos is in Project X Zone as well. So she still is beloved in Japan. I don't have it here, but like it was voted one of the most popular female characters in Japan at a time. And now I just want them to bring this game back. Those that all of a sudden may be going, Xenosaga, what is that? Yeah, the bells may be going off in your head, because it's the same company that made Xenogears for Squaresoft, that of course is beloved by a lot of people, that a lot of people want to see a remake of, so they can finally finish the actual story that Xenogears was supposed to be. And they're the ones who make Xenoblade Chronicles that are beloved now. And so for me, it's one of those things of, Xenosaga should be bigger, and right now is the perfect time to make it bigger. You have its beloved nature from Xenoblade Chronicles. Why not bring Xenoblade Saga back, or Xenosaga back? And one thing I do want to clarify, in case someone tries to say this on there, Xenosaga is owned. Its IP, unfortunately, is owned by Bandai Namco. So Bandai Namco has to be the one to sign off on it. And I'm having a brain fart on his name right now. But the Tekken director, he is also one of the higher-ups for Bandai Namco, did put out on Twitter, I think it was like last year or the year prior, that at one time, Bandai Namco did consider making a Xenoblade or Xenosaga Chronicles, an HD Chronicles. However, Bandai Namco felt that it wouldn't sell well, and so the idea was scrapped. Bandai Namco, I beg of you, please bring this out. I think it will do way better than you actually think it will. Now I'm going to get off my soapbox.
I'm going to let that breathe a little bit. That was awesome. That was a really awesome. I said this about the other three games you said. I really, really, really want to play Xenosaga right now. It was weird because as you were discussing it and you brought up Xenogears, Tetsuya Takahashi, the director and co-writer for the series. His wife, Soraya Saga, is actually the other co-writer, and helped him also with Xenogears. I thought that they were connected, but then they didn't look like they were because Monolith Soft made Xenosaga. So I was like, what was that? But then I saw it was a spiritual successor to Xenogears, which Takahashi and Saga also were in charge of. And I remember, I believe it was our mutual friend, AT, he was playing it when we were all living together. And I wanted to try it. I didn't end up doing it, but I wanted to try that game too. But like, just listen to you say Xenosaga. And I remember when I first saw this thing on the box, this art in the box, I was like, man, that character looks familiar. And I saw Cosmos had its own, or had her own wiki page, which already tells you like, all right, well, she at least is really popular. And yeah, I remember playing her. I think she was in a fighting game. It might've been like a versus like Capcom game or some kind of like something like that. She was like a character you could select and something like that. At least the name like was really familiar to me. You click on the link and like, and there's a costume you can get in like Tales of Vesperia for Judith. There's like, she's in the tactical role-playing game Namco X Capcom and just random stuff like that. So like you said, she's very popular. And I like the list of people that worked on, especially Xenosaga. You had Takahashi, we already talked about. Soraya Saga, who we talked about, worked on Final Fantasy. She's a graphic designer on Final Fantasy IV. Easy Type, Romancing Saga, Final Fantasy V, Final Fantasy VI. The character designer was Kunihiko Tanaka, who is a character designer on Xenogears, worked on Dragon Slayer, worked on all the Xenosagas, or worked on Xenosaga Episode 1 and 2, Xenoblade Chronicles X and 2. And then you go to the music, which is done by Yasunori Mitsuda, who worked on Chrono Trigger, worked on your favorite game, Chrono Cross. One of your favorite games, just worked on a bunch of stuff with Takahashi and Saga as well. Like, this is all just like kind of like, what's really cool about the story is it really seems like this is a group of friends that really knew each other that were like, we have an idea and we want to create this thing. And it sounds like, at least for you, and I would assume if I played it, it would resonate with me as well, that it really resonated with a core group of people. And it's a real shame that a lot of these, I don't want to get in my capitalist soapbox, but it's a real shame that money speaks so much sometimes on how well things are. Because you see something, you see like the spark in there that's like, there's something special about this, but it just doesn't make enough money. And that ends up being the deciding factor, even though it's like, well, what if you let this thing go to its conclusion? And sometimes companies also see that vision. One of the biggest things, this is a pro wrestling random sidebar. One of the things that I hear a lot of times with Vince McMahon of WWE is if he doesn't understand your character, it doesn't matter how much you love your character as a pro wrestler. It's just never going to get over. He has to understand what you were trying to do. At first, it was Stone Cold Steve Austin, who ended up making Vince probably the most money he's ever made, and helped. Well, maybe not. John Cena's probably that, but like at the time, at least, he was like the biggest selling point and one of the biggest boom period in pro wrestling. Like Vince at first didn't get it. Like he was like censoring his like interviews and stuff like that, and his promos, and like cutting. Editing his promos and cutting stuff out and jokes he was making or criticisms of like other wrestlers. Like Aldo Montoya, also known as Just Incredible, had a yellow mask on and Stone Cold called it a yellow jock strap. And that part was edited out and just stuff like that. Cause Vince didn't understand it. But once Vince understood it, Stone Cold was able to actually go and succeed as well as it is. And sometimes that's just what it is. The people in charge, they don't understand what you're going for. And that's sometimes is, not anything of your fault, and that's just the downfall of that, and that's a real bummer because this game, especially as vociferously as you defended it, I don't even know if I use that word right, but as vehemently as you defended it, it sounds like a really cool game. I would love to give it a try. I would love to give the Xenosaga a try, and it actually, it's a nice little segue for I guess would be my number two, even though I want to put it in my number one, but it's, did you have anything more I wanted to say on Xenosaga, by the way?
No, I just, again, you're going to hear me say it in all of our things when we're talking about showcases, especially around Summer Games Fest kickoff show. I ask for it all the time. I just want, I want an HD collection of it. And it's not, it doesn't have to be a huge remaster. Like, personally, I don't want a huge remake. I would love it, right? But I don't need it. Yeah. What I just want is the same thing that I think a lot of people ask for a number of games, not just Xenosaga, but just give me a modern way to play this game. Yeah. And especially, again, with this being episodes 2 and 3, again, I'm not going to just do it right now, but if you want to, go look on Amazon, go look on eBay to try to buy these. You're looking at hundreds of dollars to try to just... Yeah. Get your hand on the game, right? So just give me an HD collection so I can play these games. And yeah, also, I just want to say this episode is going to be very long. Our special episodes always are. So just stick with it. But go ahead, Pete. Go ahead.
It gives them an extra time to like listen to our thoughts. This is the first time I get to talk about rant about games that I want. So we're segueing. This is actually would be my number one. But I'm going to talk about it because it's just it resonates in this, with me in a similar way that Xenosaga does with Jeremy. In the same way that he had Xenosaga Episode 1 is kind of like representing all this, Lunar Eternal Blue represents Lunar Eternal Blue and Lunar the Silver Star for me. This game was, when I was a kid, I remember playing Lunar... the Silver Star on Sega CD, and it was the first time I fell in love with JRPGs. It was the first actual RPG I played. It was a game that had voice acting, which I was floored by. Never really experienced that before, unless it was like a full FMV kind of game, which a couple of those were around. But this was like the first one where it was like there was an animated game that had voice acting to it. That was the first thing that gripped me. And I was just like, whoa, these characters are talking. Usually I have to read for this stuff, but sometimes in some of these animated movies, they talk. That's really cool. And so that was the first thing that gripped me. And that was Lunar the Silver Star. I was probably like 4 or 5 years old at the time. And at the time, I didn't really register. My dad was helping me beat the game. I'd be like going to bed, and I'd be like super much further along. And I was like, "Ah, cool! I'm almost at the end," and stuff like that. I ended up actually beating the Sega CD one. It was remade for the PlayStation, and I beat that one. So that one, I ended up finding out the whole story. Generally, there was a few things changed in the remake, but it was mostly kind of pretty much the same game. Lunar 2, and then I found out there was actually a sequel, kind of. It's called Lunar 2, but it's like a sequel set 1,000 years into the future. It's still kind of like the same world, like it's still the same technology. It's not like, oh, we went super futuristic or anything like that. But and there are some tie-ins from the original game to the Lunar 2. But Lunar 2 Eternal Blue. And the reason why it's on here and not Lunar is because Lunar's had, I believe, 3 remakes at this point. More if you include the fact that some of the remakes were released on multiple systems. I know Lunar the Silver Star Story Complete was released on PlayStation, and I believe it was Dreamcast. It's either Dreamcast or Saturn. But it's also released, there's one released for Game Boy Advance that was like 2009 or 2010. There was a re-release of a Silver Star called Silver Star Harmony that was released on the PSP. All those games are really cool. Lunar 2 Eternal Blue has not had a remake since PlayStation. And that was the last time that game was released was 2000. So this is over 20 years now. The way the gameplay is, it's kind of, I guess the best way to describe it would be if you've played a Trails game. It's kind of similar because like you have sort of like a mini board. Unlike in Trails, you don't actually see like any of the spaces, but each character, like you have like your little sprites on the right side and the enemies are on the left. And you can do basic attacks where they like kind of like move into position sometimes if they're too far back. And their physical attack characters, they might not reach in one step, but usually they do. A lot of your abilities either target a single character, they target or a single enemy, they target all the enemies, or they have like an area of effect. Some of them are a straight line. So like if you line up the enemies in a specific area, it'll take all of them out or some of them out. Some of them is just a smaller area of effect. Instead of hitting all of them, it'll be like, you know, a circle, and you get to hit multiple enemies or just one. So the game plan there is kind of turn by turn based. You decide at the beginning of the round, like what all your characters are going to do. The thing that gripped me, and I talked about this before, is the story for Lunar Silver Star was pretty simple. It was boy meets girl. They've been raised together basically because the girl was left on the doorstep. There's a whole lot of thing that as you progress through the story, but girl gets kidnapped. Boy gets his buddies together and they go and rescue the girl, and you know, they live happily ever after. Lunar 2 follows a similar role, but each character, instead of like focusing on like the two main characters for the most part, with a little bit of the side characters, like kind of like every character gets all the main characters get their own little like backstory and coverage, because the way they design it is like a bunch of the enemies are tied into each of the main characters, one each. So they were able to dive into the backstories of each and kind of like give them their own motivations for stuff like that, instead of just being like, oh, we want to help out our buddy or whatever the first game. So I think the story's a lot more fleshed out. I think that they have like a new game plus mode that it's not like you start the game over, but it's like an epilogue that you got to play through to kind of get to the true ending of the game, which I thought was really cool when I was playing it on the Sega CD. And one of the things that's the music is awesome. Again, the PlayStation 1's had voice acting for a lot of the parts. One of the things I thought was really awesome is like there's a lot of pop culture jokes and stuff like that. Not in the actual voice lines, but the dialogue on this side. Like I'll make a bunch of in the original game, you had like a little dragon creature called Nal, who would fly around and just make like snappy, like witty retorts to people and like make fun of them or something like that. And you just had like the characters will make jokes like that. And you just had that. And I thought that was really funny. It was kind of like, I don't know if you've ever watched like The Princess Bride, the movie from like 1988, I believe. It's kind of similar to that, where like they just kind of like a lot of witty banter in that kind of regard. Anyway, long story short, a little bit of ranting. It made my list. Why? Because it hasn't been remade in over 20 years, and I feel it deserves one. This game is really awesome. It's always a nostalgia trip every time I go and play it. If I could play it on Steam right now, and it's kind of a bummer because there were leaks before. We talked about the NVIDIA leak a couple of weeks ago based on this episode, even though it would have been like 4 days ago at the time of recording. They're talking about Final Fantasy IX remake. Well, there was a leak on Steam, I remember at one point, like it's been years now, that there was hints that Lunar the Silver Star story was going to be on Steam at some point. And it's never happened. And I'm a sad boy because of it. And I would love for Lunar and Lunar 2 to be on there. Lunar 2 takes a spot representing both of them. I have a pantheon of like things that I really like because I'm too lazy to actually rank them. When I get to the tippy top, they all just kind of like blade together. But I do have a group called the Triumvirate, and that is those are my three favorite video games of all time. It is Final Fantasy IX and Lunar and Lunar 2. So Lunar 2 represents both of them because I just think it doesn't get enough recognition, especially Lunar 2, because it's just been 20 years. There doesn't seem to be any remakes for either of them anytime soon, or any like remasters or anything like that. So it's really a bummer, and I would love it if they would just remake it so I can go and experience the joys of being like 12-year-old Pete again.
I love, again, a very vested talk about it because of like my talk with Xenosaga. I loved it. But I know I've told you this before, so like it's not a surprise. Like I've never played any of the Lunar games. I had never actually.
I think the first one is on, I don't know what phone you got. I think the first one you can buy for like $8 or $10 on your phone, not the one that has the Google store, the Apple store.
I believe. iOS. Yeah. I don't have an iOS, but I could always borrow my wife's phone if I needed to. But I've never played any of the Lunar games. I actually had never even heard of these games until you were my roommate and you told me about them.
Talked your ear off about it.
Yeah. So that was the first time I had ever heard about them. And I know how much you love these games. And, you know, like I've looked them up and I looked them up, of course, as you were talking. But like these were well-received games. So it's not even like they were, you know, 60, you know, 6 out of 10 or 7 out of 10 games. Like these were really very well received games. And so it's interesting to me not seeing them get revisited or, as you described, just ported, you know, give you again, like I said, with Xenosaga, right? A modern way to play these games. I'm just surprised that those haven't happened more often. And I mean, me being an RPG fan, I would love to dive into these to just see how they are. But I do feel like I do want to point this part out. You talked about it, but I just want to point it out. I know how much adding some cinematics, especially at that time, at our younger age, helped with just feeling more invested in the story. Again, not this game, but to use something similar that just, you know, made you more invested in the game. I always talk about the sending in Final Fantasy X, where Yuna sends the souls, you know, back after Sin.
It's a powerful scene.
Yes, and just with the PS2, when that was added, just having that scene play just made you more like, oh my God, right? And so, like, I, you know, from your talks, I was looking up little pictures, and even just seeing the pictures, like, I can imagine, like you said, 4 or 5 year old you seeing these cinematics as you're playing. Yeah, like, oh my God, this is awesome, right? I would be the same way.
So cool.
So I totally get it.
It was the first game that I get my little childhood brain could conceive, like, video games are a stellar storytelling medium. Because up until then, you play stuff like Sonic the Hedgehog, which they tell stories, but mostly what you're doing is like, oh man, I'm a little blue dude that gets to race around in the thing, and I get to run over robots and jump on Robotnik, and yeah, cool. Like, you're not thinking collect about coins. The story. Even though, yeah, collect rings, the
rings
and all that.
Rings, collect rings.
Yeah. Coins are Nintendo or Mario Neanderthal.
Sega does what Nintendo don't.
Yeah. But like, this was like the first time when I was playing a game, I was like, video games are a storytelling medium and they tell a story, and that's something you need to be mindful of and pay attention to. And I thought that was really cool. So going on to my last one, this one will be much shorter because I'm not super invested as I am in Lunar. I wanted to get a game that was more recent. I didn't want all my games to be like, oh, this is a nostalgia trip. So, and I think this game gets a little bit of recognition, but I don't think it gets nearly as much as it should. You've heard me talk about it before. Jeremy might laugh. I don't give a crap. I don't give a shit. Windjammers 2 does not get the recognition it deserves. And I'm not just saying that because I was lucky to get enough to get a copy that I could play it for free. So Windjammers 2, I just talked about a game that reminded me that that was what told me that games are a storytelling medium. Video gaming is. It's actually one of the most immersive storytelling mediums because you get to interact with what's going on. Books you just read, movies you're just watching. You don't really get to interact with what's going on. The story's already made out for you. And yes, video gaming, like, that's how it is, but you technically get to interact with what's going on in the story. The story doesn't progress until you do things within it. So you are involved in what's going on. Windjammers 2 is not like that at all because it doesn't really have, the story is basically like kind of like Street Fighter 2 or like the older ones where you're just like going around from level to level playing against other competitors. Street Fighter 2, you were, you know, as a fighting game. This is a more of a sports game. Let me see what the actual definition of it is called. It is a just sports video game. Okay, I thought it was something more deeper than that. But it's just basically like Ultimate Frisbee. But the colors really jump out at you. And whereas Lunars, they taught me about storytelling in video games. This reminded me, like, and we were talking about it with Einhander. Sometimes you just want to play something that's fun and you don't want to think about it too much. And the Windjammers is kind of a lot like that. And it really harkens back. I've referenced Street Fighter 2, and that was by design, because how colorful it is and like the cool looking areas. And like, you, if even if you're not paying attention to the game, sometimes you can look at like the background and stuff, and like some of the fans, quote unquote, that are watching, like, are like really colorful and unique, and each of them are different, look different. And it's just really cool that that the game just designs and sets up that way. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun playing with people. It's a lot of fun playing with the computer. I wish there was a better tutorial, because there's a lot of like minor things about the game that to get better, you have to kind of learn and get better at those. And they don't really tell you that until you actually go and look up to see how that works, which is kind of a minor issue I had. I also wish there's a few more game modes to play, because it's really just the game itself. But again, that kind of harkens back to like Street Fighter 2. Like, you got Street Fighter 2 because you wanted to play Street Fighter 2. You can get Street Fighter 2 to play some mini games with it. I remember, this is a real aside, there was a Castlevania game on the PSP that I bought because it had Castlevania Symphony of the Night on it. And I got to the secret area on, like, I think it was like level 3. I played the main game long enough to get to level 3, to get to the secret area, to get Symphony of the Night, and I never touched the main game again. I just played Symphony of the Night the rest of the time, because Symphony of the Night I thought was a much better game. And so I get, like, that's, you know, great. Sometimes you just kind of, I'd have to look up the name of that Castlevania game, but I just thought that was hilarious. That was literally the only reason why I bought the game. Only bought the game to get to that secret area, only got to that secret area to play Symphony of the Night, never once again touched the main title. It was hilarious. But anyway, getting back to Windjammers 2, it's pretty well received. Scores are pretty like above average. They're like 6.75 by Game Informer, 8 by IGN. It's got mid-70s for the most part. X1 is an 80 on Metacritic. There's some like some of the characters are faster, some of the characters are more powerful, which kind of lends you to like being like, oh well, do I counter this really fast character with somebody who's more of a power a character, or do I like, you know, try to outrace him and outspeed him with somebody who's about the same speed, maybe a little stronger, something like that. And I just like, there's a lot of things to it that it harkens back to like a time of like the mid-90s gaming, like art kind of like almost like, I wouldn't be surprised if like this would be like an arcade game back when arcades were still a thing, and they're not really anymore because gaming's so good at your house as opposed to how it used to be. But and that's why I think it's a little, it's ending on a downer, because it's not really a downer, but like it would definitely would have, if I didn't want to ride the wave of Xenosaga off of you, Lunar would definitely be number one and Windjammers would be number two, but that's fine. Windjammers 2 is a good center. It's a good center, good stretch four. It's not Kevin Durant. It's not Kevin Durant. It's not Anthony Davis, but you know what? He gets the job done anyway, and I'm happy to have him on my squad, and he'll get me a title.
Yeah, I kind of just chuckled because I was like, Windjammers 2 like just came out not long ago. But I will say in that same breath, I haven't heard too much about it since it released, and when it first released, people were very high on it. So it kind of comes, again, fits the narrative like we're saying. You think it should receive more praise. I think it's a great game. I loved playing Windjammers 2. I know that it's going to be just like Windjammers 1, where it's going to have a huge, I shouldn't say huge, but a very dedicated base that loves the game, that'll be very high on it for a long time. Yeah. So like, I look forward to, and I'm sure we will see those, some competitions that come out. Yeah, I would look forward to seeing some of the competitions that come out around Windjammers 2. But yeah, I'm right there with you. I think it's a good one.
All right, last one. Make it good.
Last one. Now, I feel like I'm going to be like, this is going to be Xenosaga all here's the one Here's the one that I said. If you know me, and I think, Pete, as soon as I say the game, you're going to be like, oh, my God, I can't believe I didn't think it was here. But it's this game I absolutely love. By and large, it is arguably my favorite game on PS2. And it is The Bouncer. It is a...
Never heard of this game.
You have heard of it, because I've talked about it a lot. I think we actually lived together.
Okay, yeah, never mind. Yeah. This game looks familiar. Okay,
yes,
okay.
I think we actually lived together at the time when I drove to our local GameStop after I found out they had a copy of The Bouncer still at their store, and I bought it from them because I was nice. Like, I just want this game. But for those that don't know, essentially this is a beat 'em up title that came from Square Enix, and Dream Factory was the other company that worked on it. At the time, it was Squaresoft. They hadn't purchased Enix yet. But this was essentially one of it wasn't an exact launch title, but it was a launch window title for the PS2. So this is one of the earliest games that did come out on the PS2. And essentially, the concept of the game is centers around exactly what you think it is. It is three bouncers for a bar. And essentially, they go on a rescue mission to save one of their friends, who is basically the daughter of the bar that they are bouncers for. She's like 16 or 17, so she's of course like not old enough to drink by any measures or anything, but like she's not like a super child, I guess, is the way that I'm trying to describe it. But essentially, she gets kidnapped by this high security group. They call them the Mikado Group. And it's this mega corporation. And basically, as soon as she gets kidnapped, the story goes through like some crazy stuff. Like, I think at the end of it, if I'm remembering correctly, at the end of it, like, you fight a guy who's like gonna be like trying to blow up the world or something of that nature. But the way that it describes it, and I think this is actually perfect, comes from the wiki page, is the game is structured like a playable action movie, with the plot unfolding differently depending on which character the player chooses for specific gameplay sequences. And that is exactly why I loved this game. Remember, we've talked about this a number of times on this podcast, Pete, and I have talked about it a number of times on the podcast in past episodes, even before you were here, Pete. But what is something that I love in video games is when your actions or your choices unfold different outcomes. Like, with whatever you choose, if that determines something later in the game or changes how the game goes, I love those things. And that's why I loved The Bouncer. Because in every mission, you get to choose one of three characters. You either get to choose Sion, who, those that don't know and haven't Googled already, this is basically Sora from Kingdom Hearts before Sora was made.
Badass Sora.
Yeah, but if you look at him, that is Sora's character model.
I didn't make the connection until you pointed out, but yeah, he does look a lot like Sora.
That's
like
an adult Sora before Sora in Kingdom Hearts. But you either get to choose Sion.
I mean, Tetsuya and Nomura did the character design, so that's not surprising. No,
yep, exactly. That's why I say it was Sora before Sora. But you either get to play Sion, who's him, Ko, who is basically very athletic, flexible fighter, and his play style fits that. Like, he's very fast and quick and stuff. Or Volt. And Volt, like, legitimately looks like a demon. He's like this really big, muscular dude, and he has horns, like small horns that come out of his face. Now, technically, those are supposed to be like piercings, but they are horns that were like pierced into his head. You know, there are people, of course, that have those type of piercings. But you get to play one of those three in every mission. And depending on who you chose for that mission will change what happens next and will change where the story goes and what bosses you fight and all these different things. And then what made it even cooler, in my opinion, is outside of the story mode, there was a multiplayer mode where you literally could choose these characters and beat up your friend in like a fighting in a fighting game aspect, right? Like you could use the fighting to fight them. And this was also one of the very first games to use the multi-tap attachment, which is, you know, normally your PS2 only had a plug-in for player one and a plug-in for player two. Well, if you had the multi-tap, you could go all the way up to player four, I think, on there. And or you could fight with just two computers and have a four-on-four match. But then as you kept playing, you would unlock more characters for that multiplayer. Like, you would unlock different bosses. You would unlock special characters, all these different side stories that happen. And it was essentially, like they said, a playable action movie, because you would take a character for a mission. You would beat the crap out of any of the any of the enemies that were in the map. And then as soon as that happened, cutscenes would play. And your characters would run, and a story would unfold, and all of a sudden it would be like, okay, next time to fight, which character do you want to choose? And then you would choose it, and they would always have something they would say after you chose them. So, like, if you chose Sion, he would say something. If you chose Volt, he would say something. If you chose Ko, he would say something. And I loved it. It was, as we just said it, with Lunar, right? Those cinematic cutscenes just made me feel so much more invested in the story. Granted, I'm going to be, as I said earlier, the story goes haywire. Like, literally, it starts off with you're some bouncers, right? And like I said, at some point, like, one that I really remember, I don't remember the name of the boss, and I'm trying to really quickly look this up, and I forgot to put my phone on silent, so you guys might have heard that. But
sorry, they probably heard me yawning, so it's fine.
Yeah. But there's the one character, I cannot remember her name, but she, at one point you fight her on top of a train that's like just going.
Oh God.
And that it's awesome. And she's hard, like she's very strong, and I loved it. Again, it's an early title, so I will like fully admit and say, if you go and play it now, it is going to feel clunky. Like, it doesn't feel super smooth. It is a, like, almost like a free roam type of combat. So there are times where, like, your character, you might be facing one direction and you're, like, somebody's behind you. You're trying to quickly turn around and your character doesn't exactly, like, quickly turn in place. Like, he kind of, like, does, like, a little semicircle. There are going to be things like that, that it's not very, you know, smooth in aspect. But at that time, man, the graphics were on point. The cinematics were on point for me. Again, just the overall character designs. I loved all the characters. All of the bosses as well. Just absolutely loved it. And then, like I said, like for me, the story was key. Because, like, again, just because you play with Sion, you'll get a different story at the end of it than if you played with Volt or if you played with Ko. And at the same time, if you played for Sion for the entire story, you would get one ending. But if you played with Sion here and there, but played Volt as other parts in that story, and your final mission was Sion, you'd get a different ending than you did with just playing Sion the entire time. And so, like, I loved that aspect. It just had so much replayability for myself. But unfortunately, the game is considered an absolute commercial failure. And that's the worst part about it. So here, reading it straight from Wiki. The Bouncer was a commercial failure. In its debut week, it sold 158,727 units, debuting as the fifth highest selling game across all systems. It went on to sell 219,858 units by the end of 2000, finishing as the 53rd highest selling game of the year and ninth highest selling PlayStation 2 game of the year. And then it sold an additional 126,123 units in 2001 for a total of 345,981 units. Now, granted, this is all Japan, and this released in December 23rd of 2000 in Japan. Just to give context, again, the PlayStation 2 released on March 4th in 2000 in Japan, and it released in North America in March 6, 2001, the PlayStation 2 released here in North America on October 26th. So it did not sell well at all. A lot of people, you're going to, if you Google it, there are videos that people like just straight crap on this game. But honestly, this game was so great. And again, just to kind of show that some people do still actually love this game. Its Metacritic score was a 66, but its user score was an 8.3 out of 10. So I love this game. I would love to see a remake of it or a sequel or something from it because it's such a great game, but it's not going to get that love.
Yeah, looks like it's unfortunate that that's a game that's probably not going to get around to it. Look, I understand. Look, I'm not a developer. I understand that there's a lot of I'm sure there's a lot of problems that come with trying to get these games, like, not even just free to download, like free to buy, like a collection of like 20 of them for like $5 or $10 that you can play like a bunch of them at once, or like, you know, kind of like our other topic was going to be like a PlayStation Classic or whatever, or we picked a system and like a classic bundle like that. But man, it'd be really cool if they did those kind of things for a lot of these games. Just make it like you said, a modern way to play these games, a way to download them, like without using emulators and stuff like that. I gotta learn how to do that because that's basically what this podcast, this episode taught me. Is there's a lot of games that I want to play more of, a lot of older games I want to play more of, and I don't really have access to anymore. But we do have emulators.
Yeah. Take advantage of the emulators because again, they're if you don't have a way to play it, you know, they're not being sold anymore, right? You're not technically taking away from a sale that could have benefited to potentially release a new one. But yeah, the Bouncer's a great game. I love it, and I will, you know, till my dying breath say that game is great. I love it. I might even hook up my PlayStation 2 today and play it because I just want to play it again.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Do it.
But that is, oh my God, this is such a long episode. I may break this into two episodes, but I'll do a two-parter, a twofer.
Two for one.
But that is our games for games we want to see get more praise than they do. But if you can't purchase one of these games or don't want to purchase one of these games and want to get something that's a little more modern, I'll tell you about some games that are coming out this week. And I actually mean the week that you're listening to this. And that starts with Friday, April 22nd. We have Out of the Park Baseball 23 for PC, Ganryu 2 Hakuma Kojiro for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC, Metal Tales Overkill for PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, Switch, and PC, Mokoko X for Xbox One, King Arthur Knight's Tale for PC, Demon Gaze Extra for PC, Zombie Army 4 Dead War for Switch, Dune Spice Wars for PC, The Serpent Rogue for PS5, Xbox Series, Switch, and PC, The Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe for PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC, Vampire the Masquerade Blood Hunt for PS5 and a PC, MLB The Show 22 for Switch, Holomento Early Access for PC, Abyss, Memory, Fallen Angel, and The Path of Magic for Switch and PC. On Thursday, April 28th, we have Tasumachi Behind the Twilight for PS4 and Switch, Transruby for Switch, Kaiju Wars for PC, Capital Sparks of Revolution for PC, Trigon Space Story for PC, Dorfromantic for PC, Rogue Legacy 2 for Xbox Series, Xbox One, and PC, Unsold for Xbox Series, Xbox One, Switch, and PC, and then on Friday, April 29th, you have Nintendo Switch Sports for Switch, if that wasn't clear enough for you. But Pete, is there any of these games that are interest to you?
So I've been playing MLB The Show 22 on Game Pass. So that one's been kind of interesting. If you like baseball, obviously pick that up. It's a little, I don't know how it would work on the Switch. I assume it's okay. I don't know if I would pick it up for the Switch personally. A couple of the other ones that we've gone over, Abyss Memory, Fallen Angel, and The Path of Magic, Rogue Legacy 2 and Unsold, and Nintendo Switch Sports. Those are kind of the ones that I was looking at. I just love the Switch games that actually use like the joysticks and stuff like that. Those kind of games. What was the system before Switch?
There's Wii Sports.
Yeah, Wii Sports was the same way. Like the games that are like use that dynamic, I think are really cool, and I really enjoyed playing them. So I might pick that one up as well.
Yeah, I'll probably eventually pick up Nintendo Switch Sports because I'm right there with you. I mean, Wii Sports came with the Wii, and yeah. I played the heck out of that. It was so fun. So, yeah, I'm right there on that one. For myself, the big ones that do stand out, King Arthur's Knight's Tale looked really cool. Demon Gaze Extra. I know for some people who aren't Dungeon Crawler fans, Dungeon Crawler RPG fans may overlook something like that, but Demon Gaze has a pretty good story to it. I played a little bit of it myself, but I never owned it, so I didn't get to go further into it, but Demon Gaze is a pretty good one. There's some other first-person dungeon scrolling RPGs that I love, but the big one that I want to kind of highlight is Vampire the Masquerade Bloodhunt. It's a battle royale, but I've been in the beta for that for quite a while. I really love the game. I know for some people they're battle royale out, or they feel like every battle royale is just trying to easy money, you know,
trying to get on the Fortnite coattail. I get it.
Yeah, but I felt Vampire the Masquerade is a lot of fun. It's quick. There are different types of vampires that you can use that have different skills that you can use inside the game. And there's different it just feels really good, and I just love the setting of it. So that's the big one for me. And of course that one's free. So I'm gonna of course dive into that and play. But Pete, this has been a very long episode. Again, for those that are listening to this right now, this may be part two that you're listening to this, because I might split this up into two episodes. But Pete, is there anything you want to leave our listeners with?
Two really quick things. One, thank you all for listening this long. This is a 2-hour episode, definitely the longest episode I've been a part of. But I really enjoyed the discussion. I really like the discussion. I would love to do more episodes like this too, especially in slow news weeks. More personal thing, if you like anime, and Jeremy, you probably see me talk about it several times already, Spy X Family, watch it. It's great. That's all I got.
Yeah, I think you've said that to me like a couple of times, and you also said to, I think it was you that said something about like, if I ever had to just tell somebody to watch it or to try to get them into anime, Spy X Family. There you go.
So it is very wholesome. It is very cool, very wholesome, very adorable, it's got it all.
Yeah, but everyone, thank you so much again for supporting the podcast and listening to this long episode. I really just want to echo what Pete said. I love the discussion of it. Again, hearing the games that he wanted to hear praised, and of course, getting to stand on a soapbox and talk about the games I want to see more praise about, because I feel like some of these games, I feel like all of them, obviously, but I feel like some of them really, really deserve it. And the more I can continue to speak them into existence, maybe the more we can finally get something, a modern way to play these games. Who knows?
Them their flowers.
Hey, you know what? This is big brain. We're going to end this on this, but what if any of these games, or what if all these games, are on the PlayStation Plus tiers come June? Ooh, man, sign me up for the bouncer on PlayStation Plus.
you might get me. I'd have to find my dealer to get my PS5 so I can do it or something, man.
There you go. Ooh, but everyone, anyways, thank you so much for tuning into this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I've been one of your co-hosts, Jeremy Culver, a.k.a. Darcy. This has been the California Thirst Quencher, Pete Legia, and we really enjoy bringing this to you. As always, everybody, stay hydrated, stay healthy, stay safe, and keep on gaming. We'll see you guys on the next episode.